November 13, 2020 is the Watt for Pedro show.
Get back home to you. Gonna read that book I loaned you years soon. When it's time to head out again, it's gonna be a ghost at my side. We're gonna climb up onto your pony, baby. Ride, ride, ride. Then I'll burn my souvenirs and kiss you goodbye. It's gonna be a mirror on the highway, broken into jagged shards. I'm gonna use those eyes, the window holes, for my brand new house of cards. But I won't be staying there long. Gonna keep moving toward the moon. If I haven't passed you yet, you can best believe I should be texting you soon. And I'll burn my souvenirs and kiss you goodbye.
Show happy Friday a little later than usual. Usually it's 11 bells for what, but there's a 16 hour time difference, I believe, because they don't do daylight savings time, so sometimes
that's
17
right.
You can tell people, even though it's Quentin Quarantino mode. Brother Matt is a couple miles south, the Pleasure Point, the Love Grotto. I am not totally man alone because of those software geniuses in Estonia with their Skype invention. I got Brother Sam Bennett all the way from Tokyo, 16
That's right.
hours ahead of me. We started the show off with John Coltrane and Miles Davis, who was playing with him, In Your Own Sweet Way. And then something from the brand new Bennett Kuroda album, Burn My Souvenirs, the kickoff track. In the old days of vinyl, it was really important, huh? Because that's where the needle usually, I guess until you heard it the first time, then maybe you put it in another place, but usually that's...
That's right.
And you would put the shitty song, or the shittier, hugging the label, right?
There you go.
The Lee songs on a Sonic album, although I liked them, but it seemed this Lee song was always... I know where the George Harrison songs were. But when we were doing Double Nickels on the Dime, Ethan mixed that one night, 48 if you count the cardinal sounds. So we didn't know how to put it in order. So I thought of this idea. And I thought of it, each dude had a side, and then the fourth side get the shit no one picked. That's why it's called chafe.
Right.
You know, they would pick their favorites, and they would be closer to the outside. And then,
Sure.
You know, like when you're
where the needle drops first.
Well, it's kind of also the humiliation phase of growing up when they're picking teams on the street. You know, I grew up Navy housing, so there was always enough for full teams, and but that didn't help that situation. That kind of amplified it. I ain't seen you now for...
Oh, my God. What? How many years?
I think 11.
God.
Was the last time.
That's crazy.
We did a gig. We jammed Econo.
Yeah. Over in, I think it was over in, at Shibuya. A place in Shinjuku, wasn't it?
What, I thought it was Old West or something like that.
Oh, was it? Okay. Well, I
maybe
know we
not.
Did
one. One of them was, I think the first one was at Mars.
Right.
In Shinjuku.
Mars. Yeah,
you know,
all
those things are righteous. They were always around my B-Day in December.
Right.
I got to bring Nels Klein one time, his first time.
That's right.
But
sweet.
The first time I got to play with you was in 2008. But we'll get to that. Well, I want to focus on you and your journey through music. Can you give me your earliest musical recollection?
Oh, man. Let's see. I guess my earliest music recollection would be back in Birmingham, Alabama, my hometown, you know. Seriously speaking, earliest is like childhood stuff where you're banging on the pots and pans in the kitchen, you know. That's what I started out doing. I had to bang on pots and pans for several years before my dad finally broke down and bought me a drum set, you know.
Elvin talks about that in his Different Drummer doc.
Is that right?
Well, his sister helped him with the paper route money to buy it, but he started on pots and pans.
His pop
was a preacher in a Pontiac.
Yeah, you grab what's there and make
well,
do.
Well, he had Thad Jones and Hank Jones. He had two brothers, musician. Were you married with the musician?
Yeah.
Okay. Was there instruments in the pad besides the pot? The
oh, no, wait a minute. I didn't catch that. Was who a musician?
Well, he had brothers.
Oh, you're talking about Thad Jones and Hank
and
Jones.
And Hank Jones. So he was growing up in a house with you, and I think they were older brothers, right?
Oh, yeah, okay,
so
yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. Was it similar sitch? Because the pots and pans were...
Yeah, not really, man. My two older sisters were a little bit later, when I got a little bit older, they were getting into playing, you know, folky guitar stuff. Like, they were all into Bob Dylan and Joan Baez and Pete Seeger and that whole folk.
But there was a guitar
boom.
In the pad.
There was a guitar in the pad.
Okay.
But I never gravitated to string instruments until many, many years later. I was always just...
A lot of you on
my...
the new album on this, we'll get to it later, but a three-string guitar.
Yeah, three-string guitar is what I started playing about.
It's not a... Shamisen, right?
Not a shamisen. It has frets just like a guitar, so that's why I call it a three-string guitar.
Yeah, they tune weird, right? Two of the strings have the same tuning, I think.
Well, no, actually, Mike, I use lots of different tunings. That's okay. That's the thing. Let's
stay in the old days for a little bit.
So, oh, yeah, okay.
The first the first record you bought with your own money.
Ah, first record I bought. I remember the first record I stole because we were pretty
balls.
That's another question. We were, I don't know, man. I was running with a little bit of a rough
time. Because you don't have a lot of money when you're a kid. So if you're going to buy a record, it must be something that you're really into, right?
Right, exactly. Tell you the truth, honestly speaking, I wish I could say I remember with great certainty what was the first record I bought, but I honestly don't. I guess I was more excited about the first record I stole, and that record was Blows Against the Empire by the Jefferson Starship.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That's not one of the greatest, but...
Oh, yeah, it's a pretty funny record, man. You know, I mean, I haven't really listened to it in years.
The band that they evolved from was a pretty... It was up in the city called The Airplane.
Oh, of course,
and Jack Jefferson Cassidy, Airplane. What a bassman.
Yeah.
And he still plays with the guitar man, Yorma.
Kakonen. Those guys still do a duo, right?
Right, at his pad, right, at some kind of festival. So,
oh, cool.
In school, you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
No, man, nothing like that. You know, I went to public schools in Birmingham, Alabama, and the music programs were just, I mean, they practically didn't have anything going except the marching band.
Yeah, for games,
you know, it was just redneck territory all the way, man. There was just no, you know, and to be in the marching, I mean, I wouldn't have minded playing snare drum or something in the marching band, but if you were in the marching band, it meant you had to spend your weekends at football games, you know, and marching around. I was like, I'm at school 5 days a week. Last thing I would do is come back here.
Yeah.
On Saturday and Sunday and march around for football. I hated football for one thing.
Big wool uniform. You know.
I was, you know,
I gotta remind the listeners though that for all the red in the neck, Mr. Sonny Blount's from Birmingham.
Oh, of course, Sonny Blount, Sun Ra, of course. I mean, you know, there's great people in Birmingham, man.
Did you know about
culture.
The Reverend Fred Lane? He didn't play music
Fred
for many
Lane.
Years.
That guy's, he's a total mad genius.
I had him on the show. Beautiful. Man.
I got to check that episode out. Yeah.
Okay. So let's go on with you. So when did you get your first drum set?
Well, I got my first drum set. Like I said, my dad finally broke down and got me a drum kit when I was 13. Took him a little while. And it was a pretty good kit. It was a Leedy. I think Leedy doesn't exist anymore, but they were essentially part of Slingerland or were absorbed by Slingerland or something. It was one of the old drum companies. And, I got a set of Leedy drums with a satin swirl, red satin swirl, finish, you know. And damn, I was proud of those things, you know.
Where did you play?
My deal with my dad was that, basically my dad raised me alone because my mom died when I was really young. And so my deal with my dad was I could play the drums when I got home from school up until the minute he got back from work, which was in the evening. And at that point it had to stop. So my modus operandi for years was to get off of school, run home, play the drums for 2, 3, 4 hours maybe until my dad came home, and then boom, that was it. No more drumming for the rest of the night. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to ask you. It's like, where was it, in your room, or was it a bedroom or basement?
We didn't have a basement. I just kept my drums in my room.
No, but you know, there's trippy things. Somebody was on the show where they were allowed to like prac in the living room. I think Rudy Van Gelder's first recording studio was his parents' living room.
Well, that makes sense.
That's pretty balls out of the parents.
Yeah, and he's stuck with a kind of like a one mic kind of a vibe or something for years, right? That's so cool.
Right, right. And then he hid all his techniques. When he did get more involved. I want to play here Drinking from the new record.
I've been drinking all day.
We do. We have. We're gonna make.
Nah, bro.
brother, take your golden calf and leave it by the highway. Gonna go down to Georgia, we're gonna do things my way. Stopping at the temple, got to borrow a little money. Take you to Savannah, man, the land of milk and honey. Go. Just tell them you're bringing your trumpet down to Jericho. And the walls, hey, the walls are gonna come down. Army passing through, we'll sell them beans and whiskey. Staying out of Birmingham, that place is just too risky. Cross the River Jordan, where Confederate flags will fly. Tramping down the grapes of wrath, good Lord knows we're trying. Down here, it's pretty clear who's your friend and who's your foe. Over at Jericho, and the walls, hey, the walls are gonna come down. I said they're gonna come down. Sound of angels cry. Harper David's down at the thrift shop. Ain't nobody buying. Romans with their swords and torches used our house for kindling. Banjos on our knees like weapons. Caesar will be trembling. Slave master sleeping in big bed, don't you know? The walls of Jericho, and the walls, yeah, the walls are gonna come down. They're gonna come down.
To chalk it up to Thank you. Just like reflected. once the war is over.
For Pedro Show, yeah, Drinking from the new Bennett Corona. Now, confusion after that from Skapel Big Band out of Poland, and also from Poland, from Gdansk, Trupa Trupa, they were on last week. Mangle, Agnes Steck out of Austin with Wondering Aloud. Thank you, Brother Chris. Another tune from the new album, Taking Our Trumpets to Jericho, Bennett Corona. Just Another Crazy Day on the Farm from Dot Wiggin. You know Dot Wiggin, right?
Dot Wiggin, yeah.
One of the sisters from the Shags.
From the Shags, right?
The
Philosophy
of the World album. She made a solo record.
Oh, yeah. I got to hear that solo record, man. I haven't heard that.
Well, you'll hear this right after you trumpet to Jericho.
Right on.
Chauffeur. I learned that in Proner for Pyros and helping out.
Cats.
They taught me about the chauffeur.
Nice.
A Mumbling Amens from Guided by Voices, Bob Pollard, with another thousand tunes. He played here on New Year's, 100-song gig,
good
5 hours. Bottle Home Out, DC Peeling Back, Bombs Printing, they were on a couple episodes ago, great cats. Thousands of songs, but only have done 5 gigs in 40 years.
Oh, man.
But they're bitching dudes, man. Pioneers, explorers. Wayland's song. And then Dose, they're going to reissue Kill Rockstar, the Justamente Tres album. And once the war was over, Bennett Corona. Okay, so you got this drum set, Leedy, and you practice.
That's right.
Before, you know, you tone the line with the fucking little boundaries are and shit. And
that's right.
But you're not
that's
using
right.
a drum teacher. So what are you doing? Are you playing the records?
Yeah. Yeah, I did a lot of playing to records, man.
Now, are you using headphones or just...
Yeah, it's exactly what
That's
I would do.
That's what George Hurley
you guessed
did.
It.
George Hurley, he got My Generation by The Who and Spectrum by Billy Cobham. And some headphones. And that's why the Minutemen sound the way they do.
That's
true. But, you know, there's something about teaching yourself right now. But do you do the thing, like, after school, like where you're dying to get out of... Play with some cats in a bedroom band, a basement band, a garage band.
Yeah, we did that too. I knew some guys who were
Tell me about that experience.
Well, just some guys that I knew were playing, bass. One guy had a bass, another guy had a guitar, one guy liked to sing, and we did our little thing. We didn't hardly know what we were doing. It was extremely sort of put together with spit and duct tape, you know. And basically, we did a lot of sort of generic kind of blues and sort of southern boogie rock and a certain amount of country flavored stuff. And we didn't learn all that many tunes.
Oh, you didn't copy that much off records?
Yeah, we didn't copy too much off records.
That's good, because we did.
Uh-huh. Well, that's
it was like
y'all
building
was
models.
Probably smarter.
It was like building
y'all
models. Kind of looks like the real thing, but it ain't.
Yeah, we do this thing. We just called it country jam, and we do a thing. Let's do a blues, and it was fairly like that, and it's kind of lazy to tell you the truth.
Did this band get a name?
No, we weren't even. We were just some guys that just.
Yeah, of course. Me and D Boone. Yeah. Did this for I know.
We
I,
didn't
I,
even have a name. We did a couple of.
Did you do gigs?
Little gigs.
And what
couple
was the,
of
what was the
gigs,
first one like?
You know, my first gig was just at some kind of, what was that? Damn. This is crazy, Watt. I mean, we're going so far back here, I don't even, dang.
Because you only do it once, that's why I ask. You can only do it once, Brother Sam.
Some kind of rec center or public room that was part of some apartment complex, you know. I mean, there were all these apartment complexes springing up in the 70s around Birmingham, and they usually had some kind of pool or something, you know, and some kind of rec room that the apartment dwellers could rent out.
There was a project by the Knit.
Yeah, it's kind of a proj. You could call it a proj, but not really. There's mostly, they were mostly just sort of like, middle class, lower to upper middle class, depending on the development, apartment complexes. And they were springing up all over the place. And my dad, being a single guy, we lived in a number of those too, because, he was kind of a restless fellow after my mom died. And, we were always kind of moving around from one year to the other, even though we always stayed in Birmingham. So my childhood was kind of a mixed up thing where, you know, I didn't have like a lot of long-term friends growing up, because when you're that young, you move away from a neighborhood, you might as well be moving to another city, really.
Yeah, I know. My pop was a sailor.
Well, yeah, there you go.
But that gig at the Rec Room.
Oh, now with the story of my first gig, the very first gig
at the Rec Room, yeah.
Oh, in the Rec Room, okay. The only thing I remember about that gig was that a girl that I was really kind of into came up on stage and behind the drum set and gave me a kiss on the cheek. So that was the defining sort of like, oh, this is going to be good for getting the girls. That's pretty much the only thing I remember about that gig, Watt.
Okay. So you weren't scared, or they didn't throw, you know, cups of piss at you? Or
No cups of piss.
They didn't, like,
no
cups
of
anything.
Carry you
on their shoulders, but you didn't get the kiss.
No, they were probably pretty forgiving, and I did get a kiss.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Because you can only have one of them, so that's why I ask about it. It's like buying that first record.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, by the way, what was the first band you saw play live?
Oh, let's see, man. I think it was, what was the first band? That's another good question, man. The first sort of big-ish act I saw play live might have been the Marshall Tucker Band. You ever heard of the Marshall Tucker Band?
Yeah,
it's one of those southern, you know.
No, I know, totally. In fact, the funny thing is about Corin Tucker from Sleater-Kinney.
Uh-huh.
They named their son Marshall, you know,
that's
Lester Bangs' cousin, Lance Bangs, married her, and they married. But
yeah.
I got to chat with him last time I played in Portland. But how did you from that first gig and getting the kiss, how did you get to New York City?
Oh, man, well, I left Birmingham in 77 when I was just about to turn 20. And so I didn't really stay in Birmingham very long at all. I had my own little pad for a year and a half or two and after high school. And then I buzzed out of Birmingham, man. And I moved to Boston just because at the time, somehow, New York seemed to – I had been to New York, but it just seemed a little overwhelming. You know, I was like, lad, this is might be a little bit much. So I moved to Boston. It seemed like a little more – you could get your hands around it. And I lived in Boston for about 8 years, man. And, I was just playing a lot of music up there. You know, I was doing a lot of percussion and drumming, and, I was branching out into kind of doing like a lot of improvised music. I was playing, percussion and, cuíca and shakers and Brazilian instruments, in a Brazilian band and, kind of starting to get hip to that. And I was learning, some African, drumming from, a couple of guys that were up there in Boston teaching, one fellow named Sid Smart, who was, African American, who was, still up in Boston, or I think he might have just moved to Brooklyn after all these years. Anyway, Sid was the one of a very, influential for me and taught me a whole lot. He taught me he started teaching me about polyrhythm, you know? Just your basic sort of 3/2 and your African bell rhythm, which is a ding, 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 ding. Talk about musical memories. That is one that I distinctly remember breaking through and being able to play that African bell rhythm in my right hand and a keep a 4/4 type of just a cross rhythm in 4 or 2, whatever, with the other hand. And that was just, that was a big revelation. So Boston for me was a great place to learn and play a lot, because there was so many music students up there. I wasn't really going to music school because, I couldn't really afford it. I was just working jobs and stuff. But I was hanging out with and playing with pretty much all my friends were pretty much music students at the New England Conservatory, a couple of people from Berkeley, but most of the guys and a few women as well that I was playing with at that time were all going to the conservatory. And that was a kind of a hipper scene, to tell you the truth, because they had they had Jackie Byard teaching over there, and they had George Lewis, and they had Rand Blake, and these kind of people that were really into sort of creative music. So, yeah, Boston for me for 8 years, and then I moved to New York. Yeah.
Okay. I remember you telling me about Boston now. Sorry.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah, no, I mean, shit.
We're at the end. Because
how much can you remember from somebody?
I remember it was in Matsumoto, and we had a big talk about your earlier days, and it's coming back to me now.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there was a little bit of Yoparai involved, but
I'm sure.
Remember
I'm
the sure. lady, which is kind of different for over there people, a lady sushi chef.
Oh, yeah.
This lady's ma, they let us work at the pad, and she cooked us up all this good chow and cut it up. You know,
yes.
A lot of it wasn't cooked, yes. Right?
Yeah,
anyway,
man.
We were chowing this great chow after the gig. Another Sam here was telling me his story. And now I remember that at first New York wasn't long for him, and a lot of years were in Boston. Then he went to New York in the Lower East Side. And we're at the end of the first hour, November 13, Friday, who's here? 2020, Dish Wapito, so special guest Sam Bennett, hold tight for hour two. November 13, 2020, it's the second hour of the Watford Pedro Show.
He was wearing a hat I'd never seen before. He pointed towards the sun, said, "I'll be going now. Tell the boss man I'm not coming to work no more." You my old watch and chain hanging by the door. Walked back home kicking a can along the way. Like a funeral. It was then I knew my mama, she was dead. I turned around and headed for the river instead. Don't the seconds pass like a frozen ocean? And don't the decades pass just as fast as lightning? If you find the time, won't you save some for me? Please save some for me. No.
Met my sweet Molly down at Dancing Rapid Creek. She was 6 years old and I We were playing hide and seek. Oh, how I hoped and prayed she'd find me. I thought I'd give her a little kiss, oh, yes, I would. I swear she was the prettiest thing I'd ever seen. She was the queen of my childhood. Down at Dancing Rabbit Creek, you should have seen us laughing and playing down at Dancing Rabbit Creek. There passed a few more years, and me and Molly grew into more than just friends, don't you know? We had a secret place, a little clearing in the woods with the moon up above on the glow. Oh, how I hoped and prayed she'd love me forever. Oh, yes, I did, well, didn't I know? I never imagined there could be no one better. Oh, didn't I love that girl? Down at Dancing Rabbit Creek, you should have seen us laughing and loving down at Dancing Rabbit Creek. Yeah, the very next week, we'd arranged to meet at our secret place, just near the bank of the creek. But when I arrived, I found the little note. It was pinned on that old magnolia tree. It said, "Sorry, my darling, but I'm gone and gone forever. You just forget about me." Down at Dancing Rabbit Creek.
Time doesn't move at all. It don't flow like a river.
certain something, a certain je ne sais quoi, a certain way about you, darling. When you lay down the law, you tell me I should roll with the punches. Well, honey, that's just exactly what I do.
Show, we start off the second hour with Watch and Chain, brand new Bennett Kuroda album, and Negativity from Johnny Mark and the Ricks. That's got the late, great Frank Conley from Suburban Lawns. I didn't know he passed away a couple years ago. You never know when you number, right? So we got to keep going. Keep on keeping on. 38 Angry Tires after that with Brainy Pony. And this is one of the cats from Bulma's Prendon. In fact, he is... guy with the name. Like Alice Cooper was the name of the band, right? And then the singer took it over. Well, I guess that's what this cat did. So his side project. Well, they're cool people, man. Really enjoyed them. A lot of them went to college in Richmond at VCU.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Bennett Kuroda with Dancing Rabbit Crit. Snagged in the Jump Rope from Jerome Parker Wells, great bass man out of St. Louis. Zenocronic AMM All-Stars had me aboard for April and Insomnia, even though it's fucking November and I'm sleeping fine. In My Spare Time, finally, with Bennett Kuroda. So, what happens when you go to New York City for music now from Boston?
Yeah, well, by the time I moved to New York, I had been visiting New York regularly for several years, and so I was pretty, familiar with the scene. I had met people down there and stuff. And I was definitely ready to get out, get out of Boston, man. Boston had become like just a sort of like, oh, man, what's just a bunch of cars going by. It didn't feel right anymore. So, like, I moved to Brooklyn in 84.
Oh, man, just and, a second.
You got a call?
What? Pizza, I'm doing the radio show. I got Sam from Tokyo on right now, but I'll talk to you after. Yeah.
Hey, man.
Go ahead. That's organ man from the second.
That's beautiful. That's some home style radio. Well, man. Just get a call right in the middle of the show. I love it, man. I love it. That's real life.
I hate when motherfuckers screen my calls.
Exactly.
Okay. Karma Wales, brother Sam. So you go down the I-95.
Yeah, went down the I-95, moved to Boston, moved to Brooklyn from Boston. And what was good for me was that just before I moved to Brooklyn, I had played a solo set at a college in Boston, a solo percussion set, and I was opening for the duo of Fred Frith and John Zorn. And on that gig, that's when I met Zorn. And he heard my set and he says, "Hey, you got to get out of here. You got to move to New York, man." And I was like, "Yeah, I hear you. I'm going to move to New York." So that kind of was like a nice impetus for me because, I knew Zorn was kind of a big wig on the scene down there, the creative music scene and everything. So that kind of gave me some inspiration to just bust the move and go to New York, which I did very shortly thereafter. I think I moved about 2 months later, got it together. And moved straight to Brooklyn and started playing with all those people, that have now sort of become associated with what they call the downtown scene, right? So, you know, I played in a few of Zorn's game pieces and stuff, but mostly I found other people that I enjoyed working with, like Elliot Sharp and Ned Rothenberg and Tom Cora, the late Tom Cora. Now,
Fred, right, they had a band called some Skeleton.
Yeah, he had a band called Skeleton Crew.
Right. And this,
him
this
and Tom.
Let me tell the listeners, he could play bass guitar and have a drumstick going.
Yeah.
And he played cello, and he was, we lost him way too young.
I know. Tom, it was very tragic. He died, I think, 97 was around there. And that was a blow, man, because he's a really talented musician and a great guy.
Elliot Sharp's still around, though, and he's fucking happening.
I had to do one album
with him called Bootstrappers.
Oh, yeah, the Bootstrappers, sure. Well, yeah, Elliot's a workhorse, man. He never stops. He's a charger, man. He's like a road warrior. He's like you, Watt.
Well, I found out in this racket, you kind of got to do that or you get rolled.
Yeah.
I want to play I'm Off to Nowhere.
Okay. Do it, man. That's one of my favorite songs.
Yeah.
I'm off to nowhere. Please come along. That's where they're playing our favorite song. That's what they told me. That's what I heard. You coming with me? Just say the word. I'm bound to go there. I'm off to nowhere. I'm off to nowhere. I hope you'll come. I'll have my trumpet. You bring your drum. We'll find the sugar. You shake it down. We'll tell the mayor. We own this town. I'm about to go there. I'm off to nowhere. I took a number that was never called. Jumped in my bogey, the engine stalled. I heard somebody say nowhere feels right. Thought to myself, I'm gonna go there tonight. I'm off to nowhere. Nowhere. Off to nowhere. Come go with me. The food is decent. The drinks are free. It's strictly first class. You'll go inside. They'll give an inch back. We'll take a mile. I'm bound to go there. I'm off to nowhere. Nowhere.
Thank you.
not so sure that it is. Well, anyway, what would I know? I'm just a fool trying to make it in showbiz. Still, there's people here and there who seem to think I'm smart. But where they got that idea, I don't know. Well, anyway, it's been nice talking to you, but now I really must go. You see, I'm going to Tuscaloosa, way down in Alabama. And as I leave, I promise I won't let the back door slam. Won't let the back door slam. Just as sure as the darkest hour is erased by the light of the dawn, if you just let the door close softly behind you, no one will know that you're gone. No one will know you're gone. Once or twice, but if you're seeking good advice, honey, I'm not your man. Sure, I could show you some scars here and there in my soul, but I'm sure you've got some of your own. And I ain't got no pearls of wisdom to offer. Best I could do is just to throw you this bone. Tell you to go to Tuscaloosa, way down in Alabama. And as you leave, you got to promise you won't let the back door slide. Won't let the back door slide. Let it slide.
We will sell no wine before it's time. People, that was I'm Off to Nowhere, Bennett Kuroda. And Deep in the Woods, 66 out of Dublin with Kill the Snake. Secret Circle, Earth as God's Spaceship's Pleasure Machine, by Bombo Pluto Ova. I think they're Philippines. Silver Thing, Paradise Is Now, and then Backdoor Slam, Bennett Corona. Okay, so how long did your New York City experience?
Well, I was in New York from 84 to 95. So it was about 11 years in Brooklyn. And, yeah, I played a lot of music during those years, man. And, you know, those years were also pretty active for going to Europe, a whole lot of, you know, European tours and festivals and stuff, you know, with all those folks. And with my own band, I started a group called Chunk in the early 90s. And that was when I started writing songs. You know, I started writing songs in about 1990, 91. And I put that little band together in order to, you know, get my songs across.
To realize them.
But there was to realize the songs.
There was
exactly.
Some Japan tours, too, though.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Japan.
Because I'm talking to you from Tokyo, where you've been living for 25 years.
That's right, man. That's right. After
well, tell
New
us
York,
how that happened.
Yeah, man. Well, after New York, I moved to Tokyo in 95, and it's suited me pretty damn well. So I've just I've stayed here, man. I rarely leave, man. You know, very rarely leave.
And these days, it's like,
I don't know if anybody's going anywhere.
New York, Boston added together.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't even your Tokyo time, and you start a family.
Yeah, indeed.
That's
indeed.
Great.
My daughter's 20 years old now, so, you know, 5 years into my run here in Tokyo.
Oh, 20 over there is a big deal for the ladies, right? Maybe the boys, too.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So, got a family here. This is my life, man. This is where I'm at. I don't imagine that I'll, at this point in my life, ever move anywhere else, although you never know.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody know tomorrow, as they say in Nigeria. Yeah.
That's a good thing to think about, because maybe it's a little too full of yourself to have everything planned.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, how could you?
Right? The dice get thrown. The hand gets dealt.
Yeah.
And you got to play it, right? So, But you know, you didn't give up a little any on music, but you did change. Now,
oh, yeah.
I got to play with you as a drummer, but you have kind of moved into singer, three-string guitar man.
That's right. I kind of more consider myself a songwriter now than just about a singer and a songwriter than just about anything else, to tell you the truth. I mean, I love playing the drums, but fact is I don't have that much that many real opportunities to play the drums too much anymore. I do have my New Orleans style band here in Tokyo called King Cake Baby. And, you know, up until COVID, we were doing a bunch of gigs, you know, playing all the time. And that's a really, really fun band, you know, because when it comes down to it, when it comes right down to playing the drums, that kind of New Orleans second line feel, that kind of loose rolling kind of vibe is pretty much my favorite kind of stuff there is in terms of being a drummer, in terms of drumming. I just love the feel, and I love the vibration of it. So that's kind of mostly been my drumming, you know, in the last few years has been kind of focused on that kind of vibe. But apart from that, I don't really feel all that much like a drummer anymore. You know what I mean? I mean, sure, I love to play the drums, but mostly I'm a singer and a songwriter. That's where it's at.
But it seems like drums was one way to do music. So you
exactly.
Came with the music, but you maybe taking turns with other ways to do music.
That's absolutely right, Mike. I mean, apart from the drum set, I was always kind of jumping back and forth between drums and percussion, too. And that meant a lot of hand drumming and bells and whistles and shakers and, you know. Also, for many years, got pretty heavily into electronic stuff, you know, triggering samples and doing a certain amount of programming and stuff. But, you know, that's always, well, for years, that was kind of a big part of what I did as well, you know. And even in some of my song stuff with Chunk, I started getting into sampling. And so I would put harmonic and melodic material together with percussion pads using sticks and stuff, but completely different sorts of sounds, because, you know, once sampling came on the scene, it kind of opened up some possibilities for me as a drummer slash singer-songwriter.
Well, I'm thinking that, drummer, you know, from Lower East Side.
Yeah.
DNA.
Oh, yeah, Ikue, right?
Ikue Mare.
Yeah, yeah.
Turned from drums to electronics.
She did. She went completely just into electronics. Now, I believe now she just pretty much works with the laptop, you know, and what's that software, Max or something like that?
Okay.
I don't know. Pretty kind of sophisticated music software.
I've listened to it, and also a lot of collabs.
Oh, okay, yeah.
She collaborates with a lot of
people. Yeah, yeah.
And a Tokyo singer lady, maybe she was married to Fred Frith, Tenko.
Tenko, yeah. Yeah, Tenko and Fred were together for a while.
Yeah, but she's done some collabs with Ikue. Okay, we're at the end of the second hour, November 13, 2020 edition. Watt Peters, so special guest Sam Bennett. Hold tight for hour three. November 13, 2020, it's the third hour. Watt for Peters show.
There was a fat man on stage singing, "Who do you love?" Time was moving backwards around the full moon above, and then the curtain came down. Rock and roll was dead. Everybody had a bloody bag.
Thank you.
sweet rendezvous. Cause Mr. Mason and Mr. Dixon, they went and drew a line. Let's cross it hard and sympathize a little with some chicken and wine. Chicken and wine.
For Pedro Show, we start off the third hour with Not a Place You Can Stay, Bennett Kuroda. Lost Tapes number 10 from Wasted Space, the last of the 10 tapes, although they weren't whole tapes. I think they were excerpts because they're only like 2 or 3 minutes, and those are tiny ass tapes. Music, thank you, Craniel. Music with my insane friend, a tune called Eye to Eye. This was a suggest from Ben Watson, thank you so much. It's what could be better than music with your insane friend? Or your friend with your insane self? And chicken and wine from Bennett Kuroda. So Bennett Kuroda, what's the story?
Yes. Well, I was a couple of years ago, I was doing a solo gig at a little club, and I was kind of a last-minute addition. My friend Jeff Curry, who's a bass player, has a kind of progressive metal band here in Tokyo. He had his band playing, and their opening act kind of like something happened. And he called me up and said, Sam, I got a last-minute gig, and if you want to do this slot, you're welcome. And so I said, sure. So I brought my one-string guitar down. I also play a one-string guitar watt. It's called a diddly bow, bow in the American blues tradition. So I am running the one string through some effects and pitch, some harmonization and some distortion and some wah-wah and stuff and just having fun with it, but still doing songs, you know. So I did that gig and opened up for my friend Jeff's band, and it turned out that one of the guitarists in his band is Daisuke Kuroda. And so Kuroda-san and I hit it off straight away on a personal level. I thought he was a really cool guy. And furthermore, he was one of the only musicians in this progressive metal band that I opened for who actually sat there and completely just listened to my set for the whole set. Because, you know, most of the guys were back there at the bar. Something like, who is this clown with one string, you know? Seriously. And so, like, but Daisuke was, like, totally into it. And so I was talking to him afterwards, and he's like, oh, yeah, I love your songs, you know, and I hear so much, you know, that I could do to fill in these blanks. And I was like, yeah, well, let's check it. Let's get together and, you know, see how it goes. So we got together, and it hit it off musically as well, like, straight away.
Well, can I ask you?
Yeah.
Did you evolve into progressive metal?
No.
Because your album don't sound like that.
No. We did not evolve.
So, Kuroda-san, he adapted to your sound.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, but he was a hired gun for the other guy anyway.
Well, no. He's in the band, and he plays that music.
Oh.
And he does it really, really well because he's a really, really good guitar player.
Yeah.
You know, he's got widely diverse musical interests, and but yeah, he gravitated to my stuff and he digs it, and you know, we went from there, and pretty much did a whole bunch of gigs, man, in Tokyo.
Tell me about the first one. What was the first Bennett Kuroda gig?
First Bennett Kuroda gig was actually at a kind of party. At a craft beer and liquor shop in Yokohama.
Ah, yeah. My pop.
Yeah.
That's the first place you, because that's where the sailors.
There you go. Yokohama's long history. Yeah.
We're talking the 60s.
Yeah. Long history of interaction with foreigners, man. Yokohama being a port and everything.
Right.
So, like, yeah, that was our first gig. We went down.
No, but what was it like? Yeah, tell me.
Well, we just, you know, we had rehearsed 3 or 4 times. We had about, you know, 12, 13 tunes at that time. And we just went down and played. It was a great, great little show because it was kind of perfect first gig. It was low pressure. Everybody's just drinking the craft beer and having a good time and getting drunk. And, you know, we could do our thing. So, that was a nice first gig, man. Really nice. And that's been about 2 years ago now. And since then, we must have logged about, I don't know, geez, 50, 60 gigs, maybe more. I don't know. We were really,
for that first one, really, we were good and practiced up, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, we had.
Well, when I played with you, we had no crack.
No crack.
It was a total pants shooter, but I loved it. I loved playing with you, man. It was great.
Total improvisation. It was total improvisation.
I died 10 million little boy deaths. I shit my pants. I sweated my brains. Han Bannock was on one of those. Actually, it wasn't just the first one. It was all of them because there was no fucking songs.
Oh, man. Well, that was a fun tour, man. It had its weird edges we won't even go into.
No.
At this
but
time.
But that had nothing to do with you.
No, I didn't think so. No. And I would say the same for you.
All my good memories are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big time. And thanks, the Light Brothers, you know, who made it happen.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Those were good kids, man.
Okay,
good guys.
So how long since you guys done all these gigs and were good and practiced up, was it really easy to do this album?
Well, yeah, actually the album started coming together about 6 months after we, you know, started our band. So little by little we recorded this album over the last year and a half. So it wasn't like we went in to do some massive, studio stretch and churn everything out real quick. We actually just kind of recorded a track here and there.
Piece by piece,
obviously there's a lot of overdubbing, so it's not just live, although we're mostly a live and still are kind of a live acoustic duo. But, generally speaking, the whole process of making this record was kind of stretched out over, you know, a little more than a year.
Well, let's talk another process.
Yeah.
Like, I know when you first met him, you know, and he wanted to play music with you, you showed him these tunes for that first Yokohama gig.
That's right.
But was the process different after that when you start making the record? Does he start off some ideas?
Basically the songs, the lyrics and the basic form and, you know, chord changes and stuff are pretty much all coming from me. But in the process, of course, in the process of making the record, he's had a fair amount of input for obviously into his guitar parts, especially. And, I'm always like, wide open to say, you know, try this, try that, he's versatile enough to take a lot of different approaches to a song. Cause you know what? I'm writing these songs on a 3-string guitar and it's often kind of open to interpretation. Well, how do you want to adorn these chords? What sort of chords do you want to turn them into?
I know, apart? But you know, when I look at the band, Bennett Kuroda,
it's
like Mike Watt is missing, man. You know, who the fuck were they more missing their names? So I know it's a Kuroda song is a big part, and I can hear it in the music, too.
Oh, of course, but, of course.
I was just curious about, I started off in music writing songs with my buddy D. Boone, and so the thing of the duo, two cats making music, it's intense.
No, it's strong, man. It's really strong.
You start having to make compromises, right? You bring more people into it. But when it's two.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been really, really good. I mean, it's been 99.9% positive. Every now and then we've butted heads about something. Something I was like, well, I don't think this is quite the right approach. And normally, you know, Daisuke, if I say something like that, he'll be like, okay, let me try another approach. Every once in a while, though, of course, the guy's got a pretty strong idea about what the right thing to do is. And, you know, you occasionally back up a little bit and say, okay, I'll go with, you know, I'll go with that, even though I might not think it's totally the best thing to do. But literally, that is like a very, very minor occurrence. Hardly ever, really. So generally speaking, we just get on, you know, really, really well musically and personally.
That's
why I actually called the record As Luck Would Have It, because there's no songs on the record that deal explicitly with the idea of luck or anything. Most of the songs are kind of about, like, I don't know, different sorts of subjects. Luck doesn't really come into it, but I called it As Luck Would Have It just because I just felt really lucky to meet Daisuke.
Yeah,
and to have him work with me—that's the main thing.
Yeah.
So, because it's how it is, man. I mean, you play with hundreds of different people over the course of your, you know, time on the planet, or your career in music, whatever you want to call it. But there's not, you know, to really hook up with people that you feel really kind of connect with you and that you can really work with easily without a whole lot of strife and, you know, bullshit.
Drama.
Then you're like, yeah, that's luck, man. That's a lucky thing. You know?
Well, that's kind of. That's why I hate that word normal. You be careful of that word.
Oh yeah, normal. No.
The hair on my back of my neck comes up when I hear. I want to play Big Black Cloud of Birds.
I'm gonna burn all these newspapers I've been reading. I don't know what none of it means. No, I don't know. Don't know what none of it means. It's gonna wash away our doubts and fear. It's gonna wash away. Don't it look like fun?
dream that I'm the president or in jail. And it'll all be true. Every dream is true. So honey, I hope you come and pay my bill. Come and pay my bill. Cause as of today, everything's gonna change. You better mark my words. I'm gonna move through the sky, yes I am, like a big black cloud. Black cloud of birds, big black cloud of birds.
Thank you.
lot on my mind, it's true. Jesus said, man, I'm on vacation, 'cause I got bigger fish to fry. Yeah, I got some bigger fish to fry.
Show last music.
Try it again.
Deja try vu it again. All over again, bro, Sam. Deja vu all over you. Big black cloud of birds finished off the last chunk of music for this edition.
Yeah.
And then we had Dangrouse, which we don't know what it really means, but They might be have a pidgin English kind of thing, which is really happening. Read the Sand Pebbles and the Holman and Pohan and how close these cats get. Richard McKenna from Mountain Home, Idaho wrote it. Idaho, you the pimp. And he was a sailor 23 years, China Sea. And he was a machinist, mate. Now, this was me and Dee Boone's favorite movie when we were boys. But we couldn't, you know, Steve McQueen in a sailor suit. But we couldn't figure out what it was about. But then I found out there was a book during a Porno for Power tour. And it's the only book that he wrote. And it's intense, man. It's about, it's not just about the particulars. It's bigger. It's about humanity and how we can be assholes. But there is things like, you know, they're teaching the coolies how to just copy things. And he, and Holman, this machinist mate, comes aboard. San Pebble, right? San Pablo, San Pebble. Fucked up the name. Yeah. So, no, man, I'm going to tell this guy, and he uses a metaphor of dragons getting tired and stuff to teach about steam and stuff. And, you know, the idea behind how things work.
Oh.
Instead of just monkey see, because, you know, I guess there was power to lose by learning people that. You know. Anyway, check it out. Richard McKenna, Sand Pebbles. Or the movie. Although the movie fucking changed things, especially the ending, which pissed me off.
But they often do that.
McQueen and, yeah, when they say Hollywood, they did it.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to get into it, but it really upset me in what they did. Bigger fish to fry. Well, first pandemic deceleration, get to up mix from egregious Phil bin. Phil's bin. Phil, like bin, garbage can in England, right? And then bigger fish to fry. Bennett, Corona, and this is like, speaks to Watts saying there's another Bennett Corona record in the works.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We got bigger fish to fry, Mike. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're going to fry them on up, too. We're going to fry them up for you real good.
Yaki, right? Yaki is when you...
That's right. Yaki. Yaki's,
yeah.
Yakizakana.
Yeah, that's whenever you see any kind, fish, of, yeah, you know, any kind of yaki, yeah, in the word.
Yakisoba.
Like that song, yeah, yeah. Sukiyaki People, that was Sukiyaki. The most ridiculous thing. Because actually in Japan that title was, I look up at the stars because my tears...
Yeah, it has nothing to do with sukiyaki.
Sukiyaki is a kind of chow, a soup, a stew that you make whatever you got on hand.
Exactly, exactly. Has, like, nothing to do with the actual original song. What a great melody, huh? That was
Oh, yeah. I was talking to Brother Shige about this. His cousin was, because you know about free jazz and freak out stuff, Kaoru Abe in the 70s, this sax player.
Oh, yeah.
In Tokyo, they made a movie about him and, God, what was his wife's name? Suzuki was her last name, but she wrote science fiction stuff, and it's called Endless Waltz.
Oh, and I don't remember. The daughter sued
the people who made the movie because they start with the mother's suicide.
Oh.
Because she can't live without this guy, you know. But they had a really tortured life together. This guy was a lot of drogas and rude. And it's crazy. And maybe Kanji Haino's in it. There's some contemporary, I guess he knew him in the 70s. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you know about this, some wild-ass jazz came out of Tokyo in the 70s.
Sure, yeah, a lot of free jazz, man.
But I think some people think that it's always the West bringing, you know, whatever, the rock and roll and the liberation music, when these people have traditions of it going way back.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
In fact, there's a folk thing in Japan I learned about called Ainu.
Yeah, well, right? that's a ethnic group, and
like
a group
an indigenous,
of
yeah.
Yeah, indigenous people. I knew,
but there's people in Japan, you know, musician cats getting into this stuff. It doesn't all have to come from Pedro. I mean, the West.
No. Well, you know, Pedro is the West. I mean, let's face it, man. Oh God.
So
Pedro.
You live in there 25 years.
You know, Mike, I've never been to Pedro, man. I gotta get over there.
You will. I'll give you a big 3-4-5 hour tour. I know shit. You know, I came here when I was 9, but I'm in the San Pedro Bay Historical Association, and I know more than people that are born here.
I don't.
I just fell in love with the place. But I'm curious about your 25 years.
Yeah.
In all your music that you learned in Alabama and in Massachusetts and New York State.
Yeah. Well, New York City.
I think it's still a part of the state.
It is still a part of the state. But we definitely do make the distinction. A lot of people like to say, no, I don't live in America. I live on a small island just off the coast of America. It's called,
yeah, and Amherst ain't Boston either, but I said, man.
No, that's right. That's right.
And then Mobile ain't Birmingham.
No, Birmingham, yeah.
Right. So I said Alabama, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So my fault. I'm sorry. But what I'm trying to teach you is Japan, or if you want to get specific, Tokyo.
Yeah.
What is it taught you musically, or is teaching you?
Well, you know, I've always had pretty big ears in terms of listening to all kind of music from around the world. I remember back in high school coming upon a record of Balinese Gamelan, you know, from the Nonesuch label, and having that totally blow my mind, and it didn't take too long to start discovering stuff from all over, and particularly Africa, Brazil, South America, but also, you know, Asian music and stuff. And so I guess, you know, in terms of just Japanese music that really came from Japan, and especially in terms of like what we call traditional music or folk music or something, one thing is that I'm just a big fan of the sound and the vibe of the shamisen, you know, the three string instrument, you know, that's played here in Japan. And
do you know about somehow, the sanshin?
Sanshin, yeah, from Okinawa, of course.
It's a cousin, right?
Yeah, it's a cousin, but it's definitely different. It's got a lot. It's much smaller. It's got a snakeskin head instead of a.
And also, the pick thing is way different.
Yeah,
it's more of a finger, right?
Exactly.
Your thing
pick it with the fingers.
It's more of a comb, like a kushi.
Yeah. Well, the shamisen pick is like a big spatula.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
You could flip a pancake with it, man. You know.
It's like a comb. That's what
I
thought.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and you really whack it, you know.
Right.
But
and their thing, the sanshin is like a stone thing that goes over the finger.
Yeah, it kind of goes, it's almost like a finger pick or something. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess the main thing for me is that kind of super stripped down sound of say a shamisen and a voice.
Yeah.
Or a sanshin, in Okinawa, a sanshin and a voice. Maybe a little percussion, but, you know, just those two elements, just a string, a three-string instrument, which is what I play now anyway, and a voice. And to me, that's some of the most powerful stuff there is. That's why I also love, say, you know, Delta blues and pre-war blues so much. And, you know, people like Skip James and Charlie Patton and, you know, all that stuff. I've been drawn to a lot of different kinds of music, but very, very stripped down, simple music has always held a great appeal for me. So I guess you could say that aspect of Japanese music has been something that's influenced me, you know. Super stripped down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or I would say Ikano.
Ikano. That's Mike Watt talking right there, friends. Ikano.
Ikano.
We jam Ikano.
Now, this record just came out, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, called As Luck Would Have It.
And when? Like today, yesterday,
yeah,
tomorrow?
Yeah, yesterday. Well, today you're in America.
Okay.
Yeah. And yesterday here in Japan, Friday the 13th.
And where can people find you? Sorry to interrupt.
Well, you can find us at Bandcamp.
No, but is there a website your own that nobody else owns? Yeah, Bandcamp is great, man. I think that's one of the best music sites ever.
Oh, that's why I use it, man. I mean, Bandcamp is pretty righteous, you know. When it comes right down to it, everything else is kind of like a total drag by comparison.
But there is a Sam Bennett website, right?
There is. If you go to polarityrecords.com, that's my website. Polarity, like P-O-L-A-R-I-T-Y, records. That's one word, polarityrecords.com. If you go there, there's links to everything,
yeah,
man.
Right.
There's links to the Bandcamp page. There's links to... There's more Sam Bennett at that website than you will ever need in one lifetime.
No, man. And you keep it coming, too. Now, all the songs you write.
Yeah.
Because you write a buttload of songs. They're not all Bennett Kuroda songs.
No, that's true. I've got hundreds and hundreds of songs that I just sort of recorded myself.
But even now, in the moment, right? Or are you devoting all your stuff, all your focus this way?
Yeah, pretty much, Bennett Kuroda is a major focus. But I'm still doing just, whatever, Sam Bennett songs. And tell you the truth, when I write a lot of songs, I don't know if they're going to be... most of what I write could be a Bennett Kuroda song, but not all of it.
Okay.
But a lot of it is just like winds up being, okay, well, this is a Sam Bennett song, and we'll save another one for Bennett Kuroda,
Interesting. Bands take on their own lives, become their own
beings. That's true. That's true. It's not just me anymore.
Yeah,
even if you supply
the tunes, even if you're the rudder man.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's
quite an honor to have you on the show, and especially when the next Bennett Kuroda comes out. But if you get another batch of just Sam Bennett, whatever you get going, please come on the show and I can get up to date so it ain't so long
again. Absolutely. I really, really, really appreciate the invitation, and I will not be a stranger.
Okay.
I will take you up on that, man. I'll be back.
Yes, sir.
Hey, what? I got 50 new songs, man. I want you to play them all.
I want a head-to-head between Sam Bennett and Bob Pollard.
Who would win? I think maybe Pollard would still win.
Yeah,
that guy.
Can he put out the songs? I can't believe it. I can't. And the funniest thing I saw written in an interview, he said, "I sing with an English accent so I don't sound like a hick."
I always wondered about that.
Yeah, I know. I just saw that not too long ago, and I don't even know if the dude asked him.
Right.
But I've always fucking wondered about that. Okay. Till next time, though. You got safe seas to you. Keep that.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, man. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. November 13, 2020. This is the Wat Pedro Show, people. Keep your powder dry.